Welcome to the Ronald Reagan podcast series, Words to Live By, hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan, in essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. As the United States and the United Kingdom share a common relationship, so have the President and the Prime Minister. But none has been as well-known or enduring as the friendship between Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. This relationship was able to transcend the usual politics and differences in personal styles. It was first and foremost about not merely about influence, with the goal of bending the other country to their will, as many European allies had hoped. At the crux of the Reagan-Thatcher relationship was a deep commitment to shared principles, mutual support, and a genuine personal friendship. Reflecting in his autobiography in American Life about the first time he met Margaret Thatcher in the 1970s, Ronald Reagan wrote, "I'd planned on spending only a few minutes with Margaret Thatcher, but we ended up talking for almost 2 hours. I liked her immediately. She was warm, feminine, gracious, and intelligent, and it was evident from our first words that we were soulmates when it came to reducing government and expanding economic freedom." Once president, Ronald Reagan selected Margaret Thatcher for his first White House state dinner, as well as for his last one. A White House state dinner honors a visiting head of government or reigning monarch and is one of the grandest and most glamorous of White House affairs. It is part of an official state visit and provides the President and First Lady the opportunity to honor the visiting head of state and his or her spouse. It is a courtesy, an expression of goodwill, a way of extending hospitality. It brings to mind the tradition of breaking bread with friends to seal a friendship. It is an event that also showcases global power and influence. The traditional toasts exchanged by the two leaders at the dinner offer an important and appropriate platform for the continuation of the serious dialogue that has taken place earlier in the day. Let's now listen to the toasts of President Reagan at the first state dinner on February 26, 1981. More from Ronald Reagan after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to Ronald Reagan. As I mentioned earlier, Ronald Reagan also hosted Margaret Thatcher for his last state dinner. That dinner was held on November 16, 1988.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nancy and I welcome you tonight to this dinner in honor of Prime Minister Thatcher of the United Kingdom. In 1952, when Winston Churchill had become Prime Minister for the second time, and all the troubles of the Cold War, including the hardships of rearming the West, were keenly felt, he was having a meeting with a group of American journalists in New York. In Martin Gilbert's extraordinary biography, we find recorded these words from Churchill by his doctor, Lord Moran: "What other nation in history, when it became supremely powerful, has had no thought of territorial aggrandizement, no ambition but to use its resources for the good of the world? I marvel at America's altruism, her sublime disinterestedness. All at once I realized," Lord Moran went on, Winston was in tears. His eyes were red, his voice faltered, he was deeply moved. Well, Prime Minister Thatcher, I think you can imagine how humbling it is for an American to read such an account, such a tribute from Sir Winston, a man so unselfish himself in pursuit of the cause of freedom, a man who led Britain when Britain stood bravely and unselfishly alone, is only a reminder of how deeply runs the mutual admiration on both sides of the Atlantic. When you were here 8 years ago, I first mentioned that despite all the troubles that beset us, we had every right to have hope in the future, to turn our gaze to the bright sunlit uplands of freedom. I suggested then that the totalitarian impulse had exhausted itself and that collectivism could well be at the terminal stage. Well, we've recently seen evidence that all of this may be coming about. Tonight we can hope this is so and that it will continue. We can hope that the altruism that has stood at the heart of the Alliance of Democratic Nations in the post-war era will continue to bear fruit until the whole world is safe and free. In this quest, those who love freedom have not had a better friend than our distinguished guest this evening. And so I hope, Prime Minister, it will not embarrass you if I take a moment now to record, for personal reasons and for the sake of history, our debt of gratitude to you. Throughout my presidency, Prime Minister Thatcher has shared with me the benefits of her experience and wisdom. The Prime Minister's untiring support for NATO has encouraged other allies to make the difficult decisions necessary to keep the alliance strong. Her successful fight to unshackle the British economy from government intervention and to provide greater economic freedom has been a powerful example around the world. She is a leader with vision and the courage to stay the course until the battles are won. And on occasion, she has borne the added burden of heavy criticism incurred on America's behalf. I've been fortunate over these 8 years, and for several years before that, to enjoy such a close professional and personal rapport and a genuine friendship with Margaret Thatcher. Some of our predecessors were lucky enough to have had a similar partnership: Lloyd George and Woodrow Wilson, Winston Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt. In each instance, both our nations have been enriched. At the same time, I believe we've added to the great stream of Anglo-American history and helped strengthen the tradition of a special relationship between the leaders of our two nations. The impact of Mrs. Thatcher's leadership at home and abroad secures her place in history. When we look back to 1979, the year she led the Conservative Party into office, the United Kingdom, like the United States, was suffering through a period of intense economic and social stress. British unemployment was increasing, inflation was approaching 20%, productivity, which had been stagnant for years, showed no sign of improving. Britain's best minds were often seeking economic opportunity abroad, and frequent labor unrest made economic policy decisions difficult to implement. I will not recite the impressive evidence showing how brilliantly the Prime Minister has succeeded over the last 9 years in leading Great Britain to a renaissance of both economy and spirit. They need no elaboration. Through her force of character, her determination to wrest Britain from its doldrums, her personal example of hard work and standing up for what is right, Margaret Thatcher reminded us of the crucial role strong leadership plays in a democracy. When the Prime Minister applied her formidable talents to foreign policy, the results were much the same. She approached Great Britain's role among nations with a clear vision of what she wished to accomplish and how she intended to go about it. Central to her view of the world and to mine is the NATO alliance, an alliance of mutual security and shared responsibilities. Together, the nations of NATO have succeeded in doing what almost no one would have dreamed impossible. Or possible. I don't need the M on there. We have preserved the peace and provided the foundation for the longest period of growth and prosperity in Europe's history. Today, we're faced with a Soviet leadership eager for a change and for better relations with the West. We stand ready to work with the Soviets to resolve our differences. But we must not lose sight of the policies and vision that have served us well in the past, and that the spirit and leadership of Prime Minister Thatcher have strengthened and sustained. And we must not lose hold of her patience in pursuit of our long-term objectives. Vigilance in defense of our liberties and determination in advancing the cause of human rights. Beyond Europe's boundaries, Britain and America are working together to advance an ideal, the return to democracy for many nations that have lost it. We're encouraging a democratic tide around the world, in Asia, Latin America, Africa, and even the new stirrings in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. The Prime Minister was already well established in office when I began my first term almost 8 years ago. As I prepare to depart this office in January, I take considerable satisfaction in knowing that Margaret Thatcher will still reside at number 10 Downing Street and will be there to offer President Bush her friendship, cooperation, and advice. She is a world leader in every meaning of the word, and Nancy and I are proud to claim the Thatchers as our friends, just as America is proud to claim the United Kingdom as a friend and ally. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please stand to join me in expressing admiration and appreciation for Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and in raising a toast to Her Majesty the Queen.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, first, let me say a heartfelt thank you for the magnificent hospitality which you and Mrs. Reagan have extended us this evening and throughout the visit. I think we all realize this is a very special occasion, and we're all delighted to be here with you. And thank you, too, for giving us the honor of being the first official guests in the beautifully transformed Blair House. It really is marvelous, and I would like to thank all of those who took part in doing it up. I hope Anthony Acland will forgive me for saying that it surpasses even that modest little log cabin up Massachusetts Avenue. Now, Mr. President, I have a particular feel this evening. You were so very generous in your remarks about me, and then very kindly said that I was still going to be around. And I think the important thing about this evening is that we all want to pay a very great tribute to you for your presidency, for which we're all so grateful. And I'm really rather proud that it falls to the 49th Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to pay a great tribute to the 40th President of the United States. Now, that is quite historic. There haven't been many times when a Prime Minister of the United Kingdom has been Prime Minister throughout two consecutive presidencies of the same person in the United States. Indeed, there are only three of us so far. One was Pitt the Younger, who was in number 10 Downing Street while George Washington was president. Lord Liverpool was also Prime Minister throughout the whole time of James Munro as president. And the third one is me. Unfortunately, I'm here. Pay tribute to you, sir. And as I look back over the past 8 years of our time in office together, what do I remember best? I remember the dark days of the early part of this decade when both our countries were grappling with inflation and recession. You've referred to it in your speech. And when you told me at the British Embassy in 1981 that for all our economic difficulties, we would be home safe and soon enough. It's a lovely phrase, only you could have thought of it, home safe and soon enough. We can never be wholly without economic problems, but you can rightly take tremendous pride in the 71 continuous months of expansion of the American economy. I remember too your brave words in the British Parliament a year later, words which have echoed round the world, when you ask the question, what kind of people do we think we are? And answered it by proclaiming, free people, worthy of freedom, and determined not only to remain so, but to help others gain their freedom too. I remember also your historic address in another ancient hall in London, almost exactly 6 years later. Your report on your summit meeting in Moscow was an inspiration to all who heard it. But more than that, you gave us that day your own declaration of faith in the principles which have inspired your political life. And your words illumined the centuries of history residing in Guildhall's ancient stones. And I remember vividly the feeling of sheer joy at your election 8 years ago, knowing that we thought so much alike, believed in so many of the same things, and convinced that together we could get our countries back on their feet, restore their values, and create a safer and, yes, a better world. Together we've been able to demonstrate the truth of Winston Churchill's words about our two peoples in the House of Commons in the last days of the war, when there, in the House, he said this, as long as our people act in absolute faith and honor to each other and to all other nations, they need fear none and they need fear nothing. For Mr. President, you've been more than a staunch ally and wise counselor. You've also been a wonderful friend to me and my country. A friend whose cheerful bravery in the face of personal danger and of illness overcome, we have all admired. And whose optimism and kindness have never been worn down by the pressures and preoccupations of your high office. Mr. President, it's when you believe in something as strongly as you do that you are given strength to take you through difficult times. And your belief has taken you through those difficult times. 10 years ago, Mr. President, in a letter to a young Republican, you explained what it meant to be an American And in describing the personality of the people of this land, you cited Winston again, Winston Churchill's observation that Americans seem to be the only men who can laugh and fight at the same time. Mr. President, you are one of those men, a combination of true valor and gentle good humor. In celebrating your qualities and achievements, I also pay tribute to that special person who stood by your side in all your endeavors. You don't need me to tell you, Mr. President, that in the First Lady of the United States, you've had a companion and partner whose charm, dignity, and quiet but sure courage have won the hearts of millions. We all thank her for the lead she's given in the war against drugs. She's inspired not only the young people of America, but the whole world. Nancy, for that, and for so many other things, we salute you too. Looking back on it all, what do we see? I can do no better, Mr. President, than repeat your own favorite verdict on a film script. That story, Sam Goldwyn once said, is wonderful. It's magnificent. It's prolific. So too, Mr. President, have been the Reagan years. And we draw strength from the knowledge that your successor is someone who represents all that is best in America, whose loyalty to its values and its institutions is unswerving. We warmly congratulate you, Mr. Vice President, and Barbara, on your victory. And we look forward to further great achievements under your presidency and to working with you as a true and trusted friend. Mr. President, the nature of mankind is such that the struggle for freedom can never be over. But it's a tribute and a testament to your presidency that as you leave office and make your way westward back to California, we know that you have brought to fulfillment the famous prophecy of an English poet. And not by eastern windows only, when daylight comes, comes in the light. In front, the sun climbs slow. How slowly? But westward, look, the land is bright. Ladies and gentlemen, the President. President and Nancy. Then Nancy.
In 2020, Margaret Thatcher's daughter Carol visited the Reagan Library. During her tour, she stopped for a few moments to share her memories of her mother and Ronald Reagan for us on camera. Let's listen.
My name is Carol Thatcher. I'm Margaret Thatcher's only daughter. And I saw from the inside in number 10 what it was like for 11 and a half years when she was Britain's first woman prime minister. That included, obviously, her relationship with Ronald Reagan and other world leaders when they came to visit. I do remember going into number 10. I'd been to the theatre in London one evening and it was quite late and I went in and my mother had a reputation which was totally justified for working late into the night. And I said, "Hi, Mum, don't want to disturb you. What are you working on?" She said, "Foreign policy, dear." So I said, "Oh." So she said, "Ron Reagan and I will sound the bell for freedom in Europe." One of my mother's aides said, "Actually, they each believed so strongly, but together they were unstoppable." And it isn't just what they talked about doing, anyone can talk, it's that they delivered. And I think this is what made their partnership, and of course, in relation to the Berlin Wall, such an immense success. Indeed, a world changer. And they didn't just sound the bell, they delivered. I know President Reagan was out of office by November 1989, but together with Gorbachev, my mother and Ronald Reagan, that action, that success, gave millions and millions of people who lived under communism freedom, and this is what they both so deeply believed in. I remember meeting Ronald Reagan. He had the most wonderful charisma and presence and charm. And I remember someone in the White House telling me that when Mr. Gorbachev and Mrs. Gorbachev went to visit, the crowds outside were very enthusiastic. Of course, he was a very popular international figure, and he was very late, which you don't do if you're invited to the White House. And all the White House staff were getting a bit nervous. Anyway, along came Mr. Gorbachev, and President Reagan said, "Hi, we thought you'd gone home," which of course was brilliant to diffuse, you know, the embarrassment. And after his departure, one of his aides apparently said to him, "Oh, well, Mr. President, I hope you don't mind that Mr. Gorbachev is rather hogging the limelight. You know, he's on every television screen." "Oh, no. You see, I once co-starred with Errol Flynn." He had a line for every occasion, and normally it was a winning one. One slightly amusing story, since we're in the presidential library. When my mother and the other guests that Mrs. Reagan had invited flew from the funeral in Washington, D.C. over here, at the burial, my mother was sitting next to Arnold Schwarzenegger, then governor of California. And she'd left her sunglasses on Air Force One. Of course, there was the Californian sun sinking. And Arnie said, "Oh, well, look, borrow mine." And I think Ron Reagan, who had the most wonderful, charming, twinkling, charismatic sense of humor, would have been amused that his old political mate Maggie said goodbye to him wearing a pair of Terminator shades. They were definitely friends. On several occasions, notes were exchanged on birthdays, which goes well beyond the normal courtesies afforded to fellow leaders. My brother, a twin brother, got lost in a car rally in the Sahara Desert. And when he was found, I understand that Ronald Reagan rang up to say how relieved he was. There was a personal dimension to this political relationship that I don't think is guaranteed between other world leaders. And I really put that back to the fact that they met before they became world leaders. There was a genuine affection, there was a genuine admiration. I remember after she flew to Washington for President Reagan's funeral and then came here for the sunset burial, back in the UK, an American diplomat said to her, "Oh, some of the American people were very appreciative that you actually went to the US for President Reagan's funeral," and she shot back, and I hope I sound like her, "The world owes Ron Reagan a great deal." That was the sentence, and that, I'm sure, was what she thought and what she said.
Although it is true that Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher were political allies, they were much more than that. They were friends. Their mutual respect is evidenced in President Reagan's own diary, where Lady Thatcher is mentioned over 60 times. In these entries, Prime Minister Thatcher is described by President Reagan as a tower of strength and a solid friend of the U.S., and was appreciated for her efforts to get allies to be more forceful in their actions. Margaret Thatcher, in turn, admired President Reagan and asserted that he won the Cold War without firing a shot. Together, they not only supported each other, but provided leadership and vision to the rest of the world. Thank you for listening. You can find many of President Reagan's speeches, including both inaugural addresses, on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Reagan Foundation. Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit reaganfoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Till next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A Reagan Forum podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of A Reagan Forum come out every Thursday. Like what you hear? Check out our Words to Live By podcast, featuring radio addresses and speeches Ronald Reagan delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. New episodes drop every Tuesday. And don't forget to follow @RonaldReagan on Facebook. at RonaldReagan40 on Twitter and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.